welcome to the P, B, and J podcast. I am the J, Jesse Hutmaker, joined by PB, Pat Butler. How you doing there, Pat?
I'm doing great. Doing very well, actually.
Very good. Very good. How's the weather up there?
You know, the weather here in the Midwest has been surprisingly mild yet again. I wish there was a sign that was some sort of global warming, but it, I don't know what it is. But it's warmer than usual. Let's put it that way, man. I'm still mowing my lawn, which annoys me. But it's going great, man. How about down in New Orleans?
Well, we had a drought up until today. It hadn't rained actually all month, except it like sprinkled a couple times. It rained today. We had our week's worth of weather winter, and that ended yesterday. So now we're back into spring, easing into summer. And when our good friend Tony Bezos and Susie, the Honorable Susie Bezos, visit us in April, I think it'll be a swamp then, and we'll get to listen to that that gripe all day. So
nice. But,
yeah. So what should we talk about? It's kind of a crazy time right now in our favorite world of college football.
It is, but you know, it's to you and I, it's our holiday season. The excitement is there. We're comparing notes. You and I know for several years we trade texts frantically as the weeks and days pass with each new tidbit of news, the coaching carousel, the message board heat up goes on, and we trade information. And this year, I think even more so than the past several, I don't know, maybe it's me, but this year especially, the carousel just seems to be fast and furious. And I know it's you and I, one of our favorite times of the year, but man, it's going crazy, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I read something yesterday that if Auburn doesn't win the SEC, there's rumors that Gus will go to Arkansas. And then, you know, Florida State's putting the pressure on Jimbo. So Jimbo may jump ship to Texas A&M. We had the UCLA vacancy. That was filled. The Tennessee job that I think me and you are, we should throw in our application. Maybe send them a couple highlights of us playing video game football and see what they take. They're just turned down today by the NC State coach. Ole Miss got their coach. Florida job was vacant. And that brings us to a place you and I called home for many years, Nebraska. What's the climate like there in Nebraska for the football search?
Well, all year long, the hot seat, the fire was lit under the hot seat. And halfway through the season, the athletic director was fired. And that just made the natural assumption, which I actually think was very unfair to the coach, Coach Riley, that he was just done. It was a done deal that he was going to go out since the athletic director was taken out, which would have put a lot of pressure on that guy every week to try to get the team up. I kind of felt for him in that regard. But nevertheless, it played out, and sure enough, he was let go. And so with that, there's been nothing but the assumption that the University of Central Florida coach, Scott Frost, the former Nebraska Cornhusker quarterback, is going to come home, save the day, and ride us back into glory days. And that's the assumption and has been all along.
Yeah, you know, Riley is a good guy, but good guys don't win championships. I mean, we've seen that time and time again, that we are always like, that guy is such an ass and he wins the championship. We never say, oh, he's such a good guy, I'm so happy for him. You know, you're happy for him when he like wins a big bowl game or a rivalry game, but you know, that's the extent of good guys. Yeah, the Scott Frost thing is quite interesting. A couple of my friends from Omaha are convinced that he's going to not only win the Big Ten championship next year, but he will get them into the bowl playoff. I think that's a bit ridiculous. I think that the days of Tom Osborne and how the NCAA was set up then make it really, really difficult for a program like Nebraska to get back to where they are one of the top five teams in the country year in and year out. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think the expectations are way too high. I mean, you know, a couple things real quick. I think that the landscape of college football is certainly different than when Nebraska won their national championships in the 90s. The landscape has changed. There's a tremendous amount of parity throughout college football. And with the constant churn of coaches and new systems put into play, that means that people, kids, college kids, have had opportunities to shift and move, and coaches shift and move. And it's really changed a lot of the traditional powers. There are still some that are always in play, but it shifted the balance. But anyway, and with the college football playoff, that's certainly changed. So I don't expect it to go back. I never would. I think it's foolish to think that he or anybody else is ever just going to walk in the door and suddenly snap their fingers and make us a contender overnight. I just don't think that's realistic.
Yeah, I would agree. I would liken the Nebraska job to like Auburn. You know, Auburn will be a consistent 9-10 win team every year, but they're not going to be in contention every single year. You know, they're going to have those special years every 3, 4, maybe 5 years where they are in the mix for everything. But, you know, I just think that they got that struggle of, even though they're in the South, you got Alabama. You know, you got Alabama at your door, and that makes it a little difficult. The other thing to really consider, I won't bring up the getting out of the Big 12 because you and I have beat that one to death, and that's probably a whole 3-hour podcast in itself. But I don't see a Scott Frost offense working in the middle of America week in and week out. I think it would dominate in September and first week in October. But once that temperature dips and once that weather gets sloppy, I think all bets are off on that. What is your take?
Yeah, I think when Scott Frost was the offensive coordinator at Oregon and now the head coach at UCF in Florida, I think that his offensive style and his scheme is conducive to those types of environments and the speed that is required to run those type of schemes. And not that he couldn't get speed in Nebraska, but the conditions are prime to run that offense consistently throughout the entire season. And I don't necessarily see that as a good fit for the Midwest or Big Ten. I know we have some schools that have kind of a combination where they can spread the field a little bit. But that being said, for his type of schemes that truly rely on a lot of speed, I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the fit because you just don't see it.
Yeah, you know, if you look in that conference, you know, Ohio State is the first one that jumps out to you. But when it all comes down to it, they rely on a strong running game and receivers that can spread the field. And when those things aren't working, then they struggle. And you know, I see Northwestern. They tried a similar system years back. Granted, their talent level is going to be a little bit different, but when it came time to play against your solid Wisconsin, Ohio State, Michigan State teams, it just didn't translate. You know, I've also heard people say that, well, Frost will come back and bring back the game that Tom Osborne ran. And, you know, again, that game, I think it's past its prime. Yes, it's important to run the ball, but it's a lot different now when you got 9 guys that can run a sub 4.740 on defense. And that takes away, your advantage of being a power running team. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I still think, just for fun's sake, Mike Leach needs to be the coach there.
The Pirate, and the Pirate in the Midwest. I don't know. I think it'll be interesting. Again, it was just a different time, a different era. And here's the deal. I think people are foolish to think that had Tom Osborne, you know, been of a different age and had been able to coach throughout this era, I think you're naive to think that even he wouldn't have recognized the changes, because he himself had to change and adapt to the shifting game in the 90s. And when he did, that's when he turned the corner and was able to get the talent and the scheme in that actually helped him win those championships. And that's not to say that now he's a smart enough guy that I think he probably would have known, hey, I've got to adapt the game yet again for the current state of college football and what's going to work. So I think Scott Frost is smart enough to know that. He's been very versed in the jobs that he's taken at Northern Iowa, K-State, Oregon, and Nebraska, his playing time in Nebraska, I should say. And I think that he would, he's done a good job, but I think people are foolish to assume that it's going to be a certain style. So I don't, you know, here's my question to you though. Let's shift gears back to this coaching carousel, and holy shit, man. All you need, I think, Jesse, is one good contract as a coach.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, if we look down the list of names, even someone like Butch Davis, or Butch Jones, excuse me, average coach, wasn't even a very successful mid-major coach, and now he's set for life, or not for life, or what? Well, he could be, depending on what he does. You got Charlie Weiss. He's still getting paid from two schools, and it's if you get that one contract and you have a good year where you get them to a good bowl game, chances are you're getting an extension, and you know your buyout becomes ridiculous, and you can just you can rest on that. You can go do whatever you want. You can coach your son's peewee team or your Pop Warner team, you know, and be set.
It's amazing. It's turned into an arms race with facilities and contracts. And you know, you've got to have the facilities, so you've got to pump millions into your facilities, and you've got to pump millions into a contract for your head coach and support staff. And in doing so, these coaches, man, like you said, sign one good contract and sign an extension, you're set. Done.
Yeah, you know, and all the while a family goes broke trying to send their kid to school because the football coach is making $5 million a year. Whole different topic, but yeah, it's crazy. You know, I have a conversation all the time with a coworker about, would you rather be Kirk Ferentz in Iowa or Nick Saban in Alabama? And you know, the more we talk about it, the more I keep coming back to, I'd rather be Kirk Ferentz. You know, he's living high, he's got it made. They're not going to win a national championship. Hell, I don't even think they'll win a Big Ten championship in the next 10 years. But he's getting several million dollars a year to put up seven wins, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's just it. You, to your point, I mean, well, hell, let's look at Nebraska with Mike Riley. He coached 3 years and he finished with a 19-19 record. Perfectly 500. And then when I went back and looked at the entirety of his coaching career, he was barely above 500 for his entire career. And yet he's going to walk away with 6 or 7 million. And he can retire. I mean, he's getting close to retirement age. Anyway, he's done. He's perfect. Great. Walk away.
Exactly. And you know, some TV station will pick him up to be an analyst or to call a game or something. So he'll make more money doing that too. You know, it's crazy. Universities have become so bizarre in what they do. You know, I don't think I think they give some coaches too long, some they don't give enough time to. But it's just become ridiculous, you know. I just saw that Jimbo Fisher, Texas A&M, is offering him $7 million a year, you know. That's crazy.
I give Kevin Sumlin, the coach who was just let go at Texas A&M, a lot of credit. His agent, actually, a lot of credit. He walks away from getting fired from Texas A&M and arguably had a pretty decent run there. It's questionable in many circles, I think, that he should have or should not have been let go. But that being said, it doesn't matter. He's been let go, and within 60 days, the university has to pay him over $10 million. It's not spread out. It's a lump sum, which is amazing. $10
million. Yep.
And he'll get picked up easy.
Yeah, and he had the best five-year record of any coach in their history, you know. So it's just – it's become really, really crazy. You know, living down here in SEC country, it's the Saban effect. You know, you got Les Miles who gets fired midseason. You replace him with a coach who Les Miles would have did the same thing this year. Maybe probably wouldn't have lost to Troy, but you know, you get that same record. You have the same talent. It's not like all of a sudden Coach O was dealt an empty cabinet. He had one of the best running backs in the country, one of the best offensive lines. They have the two highest paid coordinators in the country, and there was no difference between this year's team and last year's team if you watch them enough. And you know, he's not making any money, not coaching right now, and it's ridiculous.
Well, in the end, I tell you, it makes me proud for that amateur sport, Jesse. Because at the end of the day, let's remember, it's an amateur sport. Those players are not paid. And no one's making the money on them. I want to reemphasize that, you know, let's be upfront. This is all in goodwill and good faith, and the schools aren't benefiting from the hard work that these players are actually putting out.
They get an education.
That's right. Be thankful for that, right? So I say all that firmly with tongue in cheek, everyone. But hey, if that's the name of the game, that's the name of the game, I guess. You got to win. Just win, baby.
Yeah, but what's going to change it, you know? Because when we were growing up, even into the 90s, I mean, you had coaches that were career 500 coaches, and they weren't let go, you know? What changed? How have the expectations changed? When did it change?
I think it did start to change as we shifted through the 90s and into the 2000s. I think you continually see this shift and this sense of urgency by a university to win and win now and win at any cost because they see the financial benefit on the back end. And depending on the school, it supports other sports, and some schools even support some academic programs. And now it's turned into, well, I better pay this and I better escalate now because I need to see this benefit immediately. And that's where the expectations go through the roof. Win now or get out. Make this money now or get out. It's crazy, man. And I don't know what's going to break that cycle, because we're talking about Jimbo at $7 million, but you know, is it next year we're going to see a coach make $10 million in 1 year? Is it 2 years we're going to see that? It just seems like it'll just continue to escalate as we move on, and I don't know how that benefits the game. In my opinion,
now let's just think about this. So let's just go from, we'll say, right after Nebraska's last national championship, you got Bobby Bowden forced out. You got Les Miles fired. Phil Fulmer forced out, and oh crap, I just had the coach. Well, anyway, you have four coaches with national championships. How many current coaches have national championships?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Perfect point.
You know, you got Saban, you got Dabo, you got Meyer. Jimbo, and you got Meyer. You got four coaches with national championships, yet you have four coaches without a job right now that have national championships. You know, it's just crazy how that goes. It doesn't make any sense. You got Les Miles, who revived, well, Saban revived, but he kept it going, kept a solid program, churning out professional athletes, filling a stadium. He's let go. He's let go because he can't beat one coach, you know? You got Phil Fulmer, national championship. He's let go because he can't beat one coach. It's crazy how – oh, yeah, Mack Brown. That was the other one. Mack Brown, national championship, forced out, you know? It's just crazy how that works.
Yep. No, there's no end to it, my friend. No end to it. But there is an end to this podcast. And
yes, before but hold we on. Get there. Hold on. We got to – who's going to take the Tennessee job?
Well, at this point, I've been typing all morning, getting my resume. It's hard to transfer video files from some of my records on PlayStation, so I've been taking screenshots, and I'm hopeful. I think they're in trouble because they've made just a mess of the process. And now they're scrambling, and they're scrambling in a direction that's not so good. So, you know what I'm going to throw into the ring? Are you ready?
I'm listening.
Here's where it's going to get interesting. Here's my from way downtown prediction. You ready? Wild card is? I think Bo Pelini comes back. Here we go.
That would make Mark Manner happy.
You know, instant LSU fan.
You know, I want to see Kiffin back there. Even though he's been trolling them and having a good time, I think the Tennessee fans would welcome him back. I think it would be a smart hire. He knows Nick Saban. He knows the conference. He can recruit. He can develop quarterbacks. And I'm telling you, he's pretty damn entertaining. I don't care what your feelings are on him. If you read his tweets, you watch interviews with him, he just is the way I like to see coaches be.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I don't know if he moves that quick or if he I don't know, man. I don't know if he moves that quick or if he waits another year, but you know it's either going to happen real soon or next year and he's gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. All right. Okay, well, let's not bore everybody even longer with this talk. Let's get on to our punch list.
Yes. What are we watching, listening to, drinking, reading? What? Where are you at, man? What have you been listening to? Let's start there.
Well, you know, you keep pumping an artist to me, and I keep resisting and resisting and resisting. And then he was on Sunday Morning Today with Willie Geist. And so, you know, I said, I'll give this bloke another chance. So I've been listening to the new Noel Gallagher.
Yes.
I like it, and I don't like it. He's a brilliant songwriter. I will not take that away from him. I get lost somewhere. I'm going to give it a few more listens before, I make a final judgment on it. What's going on with you and your headphones?
Well, I'm going to take an interesting stance. And first of all, I'm going to say, I like the new Noel Gallagher a lot. I liked his last record even more. I love his last record. But here's where I go. Are you ready? You've been listening to Noel? Well, guess what? I've been listening to Liam. And Liam Gallagher, I've been listening to his new record, As You Were. And I'll tell you what, I used to think he used to just annoy the shit out of me. I just thought he was a cocky little shit. And now, if anything, I admire him just that much more for what he's doing and the swagger he has. I love listening to him in an interview. It is fantastic entertainment. And I love his swagger because he's been touring and he's in North America right now, and he's been touring and having fun. And I actually like his record. I think it's it's just one step away from where he left off with Oasis, and I think it's a lot of fun. So Liam Gallagher is going to counter your Noel Gallagher.
All right, I'll give that one to you. What you been watching?
Oh, just got done with what is it, Manhunt, the Unabomber. That's a cool series on Netflix. I watched Mindhunter, and then that led me to Manhunt, and that's a good one, man. I mean, both of them are good. They're interesting as you get into the FBI and these serial killers and these plottings they made. It's really cool stuff. How about you?
Well, a coworker was telling me I needed to watch Longmire, and I had never realized there were so many damn seasons of the show, so we decided to give that a try the other night. I'm going to give it a few more episodes. The series premiere, it seemed like too much shit was wrapped up and going on in one episode, but I enjoyed it. It seems like it might be able to keep my attention, so I'm going to give it a few more watches before the verdict's out. I'm going to put that with Noel. Noel and Longmire are going to get a few more spins before the verdict is out on them.
Nice.
Reading anything good lately?
You know, I've been traveling a bunch, and I've done some business book reading, but what I've really been focused on is catching up on my magazines. So I have to say my nose has been stuck in some Rolling Stones and just catching up on that stuff, which I love. I kind of save them up a little bit and then dive in and go through some of the articles and profiles they've got. So that's it. Pretty light. How about you?
Well, here's my geek moment. I love The Catcher in the Rye, and I read this book about every 2 years, and this year I decided I wanted to find a hardback edition of it. So I went on the journey of looking on the internet, and I'd find one version, and it would say that, you know, the cover's torn, or there's some highlighting, or it's got a big crease. And then I look at another one, and, you know, here I'm staring at 10 different ones trying to decide which one gets my extra buck. And so I broke down and I got a 1950s version. Yeah, I think it's a 50s version of it. 50s or 60s, I can't remember, one of those years. And so I cracked it open, and I got to just tell you, it has that smell. And I just kept reading pages because I wanted more of that smell to come to me. And I was like, I got to go to sleep. But I was like, and I just I just loved that smell. So Catcher in the Rye.
Nice.
Now, what you been drinking? I know you're out in LA and you were sampling some stuff out there, but have you did anything since you've been back?
Yeah, I was sampling some liquors, but I was counterbalancing that with Lagunitas IPA, my friend. It's just a good standby. I've gone to many times, and I like what they're doing. And I always have, and I like that IPA. I think it's a good IPA. So I kind of balance that out with the liquor I was drinking. How about you?
Well, you know, I'm not really I don't really get into the Christmas beers, the winter beers. But at work, I was having a kind of a stressful day, and I went upstairs to the Mellow Mushroom, and they had the Bell's winter ale on tap, and I'm a big fan of Bell's. I decided I would give that a shot, and I really, really liked it. It's a Scottish ale. It was refreshing, well worth the happy hour price, and it went down a little too easily, but it was good. I'll definitely have more of that one.
Nice, nice. Yeah, the winter beers are upon us. Here we go. Drinking a Christmas tree. that's what it tastes like sometimes. I'm like, Jesus, oh, yeah. what'd you put in this? Anyway, well, listen, we're going to wind things down, and we want to thank everybody for joining us on this episode of PB&J Pod. We will be back very soon. We've got a couple coming out right after this, but we'll see how this coaching carousel turns out really quickly. So thanks for the good talk, Jess. Appreciate it, man.
Giggum.
That's right. That's right. Thanks for tuning in to the PB&J Podcast. It is a Find the River production. We'll talk to y'all soon.